He's right. It's me. It's me. Alrighty. I've got to think that hands down one of the most common questions that I get over and over again is about what do you do about cholesterol? And I think it's been preached so much in the media and so much by the medical profession that people are just terrified. They probably think of cholesterol like the coronavirus of fatty acids or lipids. Well, I came across this article. I'm going to share it with you. Who doesn't like cinnamon? I mean, cinnamon tastes delicious. If you had a bowl of oatmeal, you could sprinkle some cinnamon on it. If you had, depending on the dish or the dessert that you have, cinnamon might be the most award-winning addition to that. Well, let me share this with you. I came across this, and I realized this was a small study, but what they did was they took 60 individuals that had adult-onset type 2 diabetes. I'm not referring to type 1 diabetes, where a person either has an autoimmune reaction in their pancreas, the portion of the pancreas that produces insulin is no longer working. So whether it's dead or it's severely under-functioning, either way, they cannot make enough insulin. Type 2 diabetes is a whole different enchilada. That's when a person has what's called insulin resistance. And I realize this may be kind of a difficult concept, but usually that means they've got plenty of insulin, but their cells no longer respond to it because there's just way too much of it. And there's a lot of factors involved. But as far as the conversation this morning, why don't we just talk about the role of cinnamon in this study? And so, like I said before, 60 people that had type 2 diabetes, and what they demonstrated was that if they can convince them to take somewhere between 1 and 6 grams of cinnamon taken daily for 40 days, I like the number 40, don't you? 40 days. Anyway, that's not long. Sometimes people want to see a fast result. Well, 40 days is not long to wait if you want to see a result of some kind. So remember the dosage, somewhere between 1 and 6 grams of cinnamon. So at the end of the 40 days, they managed to reduce their fasting glucose by 18% to 29%. That's a pretty big number right there. Actually, let me grab a calculator right here. Let's just say that your fasting blood sugar is 150. Times 0.29. Oh my goodness. You could have your fasting blood sugar be at 150, and after 40 days of taking cinnamon, it could be down to like 106.5. That's huge. Wouldn't you say that's like a quantum leap in the right direction? Now get this right here. One of the markers that a physician or a nurse or a physician's assistant or a practitioner will measure is called triglycerides. And triglyceride, you know, the first part of that word is tri, T-R-I, that means three. And glycerides, basically there's three glycerol molecules, and when you take three molecules of sugar, guess what it forms in the body? It forms fat. Well, triglycerides are the only form of fat that's really stored in the body consistently. And so if the triglycerides are elevated, well, there's a lot of ways to look at this. Number one, having total triglycerides above 200 is one of the greatest predictors if a person is headed toward having a stroke. I know it's early Saturday morning. I'm not trying to be negative, but it is what it is. And so I'd like to kind of remain neutral about that, not to put too much thought into it. But if you have a total triglyceride level above 200, you're kind of asking for a pipe to burst or break or split or crack open. So we need to relieve some of the pressure on that. And one of the ways of relieving pressure on the arteries of the body is just to reduce the amount of triglycerides. Think of it this way. The more triglycerides that you cram into a balloon, the more that balloon is going to start to bulge and expand, right? Well, your arteries are the same way. And so remember that somewhere between 1 to 6 grams of cinnamon. That is what they use in order to lower blood glucose by 18 to 29%. Well, on the triglycerides, If you took 1 gram of powdered cinnamon a day, actually 1 gram, you could take that in just one capsule. You could easily find a, well, I didn't say easily. You could easily find a capsule of cinnamon that's 500 milligrams. So if you took 2 of those, you'd be to 1 gram, right? Lower the triglycerides by 23%. That's huge. If you took the 6 grams, well, the results were even better. 30% reduction. Now, this is the part that kind of caught my attention. I thought I'd share it with you. It's not really cholesterol, but they call it cholesterol, so I'm not going to argue over that point, but it's called LDL, low-density lipoprotein. So LDL is almost always in every textbook an article referred to as the bad cholesterol. I don't know that I want to call it bad cholesterol, but it's a lipoprotein. The problem is, if that form of cholesterol begins to oxidize, that means it starts to rust. If it starts to rust, then you've got a problem, because rusted cholesterol, it loves to accumulate in that inner lining of your arteries, the endothelium. You don't want that. So enter cinnamon. So they showed in this study of 60 individuals that had type 2 diabetes, that they took 1 gram of the cinnamon powder, that lowered the LDL by 7%. Now, that may not sound impressive, but when you get up to 6 grams of cinnamon, that lowered the LDL by 27%. So let me just pick a number here. I'm going to choose 150 again. Let's say you go to the doctor and your LDL cholesterol comes in at 150. That's a 40-point drop. Bam! You're back to normal. So I know a lot of people, they have a lot of fear and concern around that issue. So maybe there's something going on here that we don't know about, meaning maybe your body can function better in the presence of certain herbs and spices. Obviously, if you want to call cinnamon an herb or spice, I'm not going to argue with you. Now, when they measured these diabetics' total cholesterol, they showed that if you took 1 gram of cinnamon a day for 40 days, it lowered it by 12%. Well, that's a big deal. But if you took 6 grams, it lowered your total cholesterol by 26%. So let me make up a number here. Let's just say that you go to the doctor and he says, this is unacceptable, you know, we can't do this anymore. Your total cholesterol is 250. That's just ridiculous. Well, if you took the 6 grams of cinnamon, it would lower your total cholesterol by 65 points. Let me see. I'm really good at math here on Randy's calculator. So if I take 250 and subtract it by 65, come in a total cholesterol of 185. Folks, isn't that huge? That's huge. Now, let me ask you this. If you take cinnamon, does it have the side effect of making your legs ache and hurt so bad that you can't walk? No. Actually, I got to be careful how I say this. One of the aspects of cinnamon is it's very good for the digestive tract. So let's just say you know of a person that has a stomach, gut, intestines, colon, whatever you want to say, that has a lot of gas. Well, maybe cinnamon could be a benefit. Okay, somebody was trying to call. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. And, of course, what I forgot to mention from this particular study of the 60 diabetics that took 1 to 6 grams of cinnamon a day, they had some in this group that didn't take any cinnamon at all, and here's what it said. It said, in contrast with those individuals that didn't take any cinnamon, there were no changes for the subjects who did not take cinnamon. I know that was redundant the way I said that. So, isn't that interesting? To me, it shows that God really cares about us and that He loves us. He's given us all these things that are very, very, very good for us. Okay. If no one calls, I'm going on to the next topic. This one I found interesting also. I'm going to go back to Dr. Robert Fivecoat. He was my clinic supervisor back in the 80s. And when I say 80s, I mean 1980s, not the 1880s like you're probably thinking. Okay, I got it. That's pretty funny. But Dr. Fivecoat, you say to me, he would say, Roy, here's the equation that you're going to be working with every day in and day out for the rest of your life, as long as you're a chiropractor. And so when Dr. Fivecoat would actually offer advice, I would kind of like sit back and take a listen, because at the time he was 93 years of age, and I'm guessing that from age 93 in 1988 until now, he's probably not still alive. But anyway, you get the gist of where I'm coming from. But Dr. Fivecoat would pull me aside. He actually liked me. Of course, I liked him too. But he was such a kind, dear man, very, very patient. Patience wasn't my virtue back in 88, but God is merciful and kind. He gives us a chance to learn those graces, doesn't he? But Dr. Fivecoat would say, if cells or tissues or glands in the body break down at a much faster rate than the ability of your body to repair them, that's when a human being has symptoms of some kind. Well, you know as well as I do, the symptoms are almost endless. It could be very poor quality sleep. You could have no energy. You could be completely exhausted. You could tell me that you hurt and ache all over, that you have chronic migraine headaches, that you have significant issues with your skin. There's red, flaky, crusty stuff growing on your elbows. Well, these are all signs that your body's in disrepair. So on one level, it is a gift from God to have symptoms, because they're pointing you toward a potential system in your body that's struggling, that's not working right. And so Dr. Fivecoat would go on to say, he would say, Roy, when the cells get to the end of their lifespan, or they break down, or they're damaged, if your body or your immune system can remove the damaged cell and it can be replaced by a healthy, strong cell, then that's going to keep you in balance. You're not going to have any symptoms of any kind. But what do you do when the body breaks down at a faster rate than its ability to make repairs? You are going to have problems. And so one of the big issues that almost every human being is going to face today is going to be the idea, or the reality. Yeah, it's reality. It's not an idea. It happens every single day. If you don't believe me, just listen very closely tomorrow morning when you attend church services. And so whoever is making the announcements, they will tell you that Sister Jones will be having a knee replacement and to please pray for her. Or Brother Smith is going to have a hip replacement in 2 weeks, so we need to pray for him. Anyway, the point I'm getting to is most people do not outlive their joints. Oh, no. What'll happen is the joints will start to break down at a faster rate than the ability of your body to repair them. And for all I know, it could have been just one event. I talked to a man yesterday, and he told me he knew exactly what caused his knee to be damaged severely, where it had to be replaced by an artificial knee. And I said, what was that? He said he packed out 1/4 of an elk in the snow at freezing temperatures over a real torturous terrain, and he said, that's what wrecked my knee right there. And I said, okay. I think he said that was 1969. I could be wrong about that. But you and I are not going to outlive our joints unless we do something. So if I looked up the studies on the occurrence of osteoarthritis, sometimes that's called the wear and tear type of arthritis. That's where you can get a loss of your joint space, meaning the cartilage becomes worn down, it becomes thinned. It no longer has the lubrication that it used to. It's not shock absorbing like it used to. You get bone spurs and calcium deposits. I mean, haven't you extended your hand to someone to greet them and to shake their hand, and you noticed that their fingers were just a little bit distorted or twisted or bent? And you could see right beneath her fingernails, they had these big lumps or knots, almost like small ball bearings that have been inserted under the skin. Well, those are called Hebridean's nodes. Or maybe another way of saying it is you got a big honking calcium deposit. Now, as a general rule, let me tell you what the body does. It's very good at doing this. Any joint that stays chronically inflamed for a long enough period of time, the body's response to that is to calcify it. That is no bueno. You know what that means? I'm trying to speak a language you understand. No bueno. And so when you have pain of a joint, you're supposed to say, okay, what is my play here? What is the best option that I can take to try to curtail this damage? How can I turn it around? And so enter the spice called ginger. Okay, let me see if I can find this right here. Okay. Let me read this to you. I'm skipping the part about nauseousness and dizziness and vomiting and cold sweats and motion sickness, but that to me is very intriguing. If I have time, I'll come back to that. But I want you to know that ginger contains very potent anti-inflammatory compounds, and they're named gingerols. That makes sense to me. So these substances are believed to explain why so many people with osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis, they experience reductions in their pain levels and improvements in their mobility when they consume ginger regularly. I don't know if you just picked up on what I just said there, but if you suffer from horrible arthritis or you have a debilitated joint or some degeneration of a joint, maybe we need to think about this just for a moment. Because the truth is, anything that greatly reduces pain and inflammation in a joint and you're able to move better, that is your ticket to rejuvenation and getting well. It says here that gingerols inhibit the formation of inflammatory cytokines, which these are the chemical messengers of the immune system. That's the same thing that all the drugs do, like Mobic and aspirin and Tylenol and Advil. The problem is they destroy your joints. There's not one study that shows that if you take over-the-counter anti-inflammatories or you take prescription drugs that your joints are actually going to rejuvenate. No, that doesn't happen. Many of those drugs, what's the name of one of them? It begins with the letter I. I can't remember the name of it. Indomethacin, maybe? Yeah, I think that's it. The drug called indomethacin. Oh, my word. Is it effective for severe hip pain? Oh, yes, it's very effective. But at a very negative price, meaning it has been shown to cause the hip joint to deteriorate 10 times faster than if you didn't take it. And almost every person that I've seen take that drug, I always ask them the question, did your physician tell you that your joint's going to deteriorate 10 times faster because of this drug? And the answer is the same. It's no. They never apprised me of that information. So let me read this to you right here. In order to put this to the test and test the ability of ginger to reduce inflammation, they came up with a preliminary clinical study that was conducted on 7 patients with rheumatoid arthritis, in whom conventional drugs that only provide temporary or partial relief. So I know this may not sound impressive, but if you were one of these 7 people, you might rethink it differently. And so one patient out of the 7 took 50 grams per day of lightly cooked ginger, okay, while the remaining 6 took either 5 grams of fresh ginger or 0.1 to 1 gram of the powdered ginger daily. It says in the study that all patients reported substantial improvement, including pain relief, increased joint mobility. By the way, that's pretty positive right there, wouldn't you say? Less pain, able to move better. They noticed there was decreased swelling and there was decreased morning stiffness. That has got to be a bonus. Now, what they did was they did a follow-up study. They had a few more people in it. In this follow-up study, they had 28 patients that had rheumatoid arthritis. And it just so happened that 18 of those with rheumatoid, they also had what's called osteoarthritis. And they had 10 that had very severe muscular discomfort. But what they'd been doing was they were taking powdered ginger for periods ranging from 3 months to 2.5 years. And these were the people they evaluated. Now, based on the clinical observations, the researchers reported that 75% of the arthritis patients and 100%, I can't make that number up, folks. 100 sounds like a pretty good number, right? 100% of the patients that had muscular discomfort, they experienced pain relief or relief of swelling. So the recommended dosage was 500 to 1,000 milligrams of the ginger per day, but many patients took 3 to 4 times this amount. And the reason that's significant, and of course, here's what you got to remember. Sometimes there's a dose that'll get you started, and there's also, at times, there's certain spices or herbs or natural remedies you can take where you get a bigger bang for the buck if you take a little bit more than what's recommended. Always remember that. So the patients taking the highest doses, they report quicker and greater relief. The last time I checked, if a person starts to get substantial relief of their pain and suffering, and if they see a rapid improvement, and they feel better, and the swelling of their joints goes away, and they can walk and bend their knee by climbing up and down stairs or getting in and out of a car or stepping up on a curb to go into the grocery store to buy groceries, that is a positive thing. So that is for your consideration. Someone was just trying to call. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. I'd be more than happy to take your phone call. The number is 903-586-5257. But hey, if nobody calls, I'm going to cover the topic of being nauseated and dizzy when it comes to ginger. Okay, here we go. Here's a phone call right here. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm liking what I'm hearing this morning. It's pretty cool.
Good.
Hey, what about, say, gum deterioration or plaque around the gums?
Who has
That's
it?
Kind of a deterioration type of situation.
Well, it means the conditions are right. Let me give you two or three ideas here. There was a study that I read years ago where they took... And in this study, it was women, so don't take offense to that because I'm not including men in this equation. But in this particular study, they gave women a substance called coenzyme Q10. That is a fat-soluble vitamin that under normal circumstances, your body can make plenty of it. But sometimes as we age, our bodies just do not make as much of the good things as they used to. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And so these women had very significant periodontal disease. Sometimes it's called perio for short. And in that, you've got receding gums. You've got red, inflamed, sometimes infected gums. And then you've got a significant amount of plaque, which when you have plaque and gunk build up around the teeth, that would be maybe one of the body's ways of telling you that, hey, there's quite a bit of inflammation around these teeth here. And so all these things lead to potential problems. One of the problems it can lead to is anything that affects the teeth with low-grade chronic infections, whether it's streptococcus or something else, that can lead to problems down the road with the heart. Because when you have inflamed gums, oh my goodness, those gums are just right there next to all the arteries in your jaw. And if you get toxic bacteria that go from the periodontal disease into those arteries, guess where they go? They go straight to the heart. And that particular type of bacteria called Streptococcus, oh my word, it seems to love to eat and munch on the mitral valve or the tricuspid valve. So if you've ever heard of a person having rheumatic fever or rheumatic heart disease,
mm-hmm.
that usually comes from the teeth. And so there's been many theories published what actually causes heart disease or plaque to build up in the arteries. And so one from the 1990s, they demonstrate very clearly that if a person goes into a cardiologist's office and they say, we need to schedule a dye job to find out what's going on with your heart, because I really suspect that you have an artery that is not delivering all the blood and oxygen to the heart it should. And a lot of times those are called coronary arteries. That's the arterial system that feeds and nourishes the heart. So if the doctor does the dye job, he says, oh my goodness, you've got one artery, that posterior circumferential artery, just that one. All the other ones are clear. But that one has a big chunk of plaque in there, and you have like a 98.2% blockage. You're barely getting any blood flow. And so the patient asks the doctor, and they go, well, why would just one artery have plaque in it and not the other ones? And he's probably going to turn and say, most likely it's because of the condition of your teeth. And so that plaque there is where you've started a low-grade infection in the lining of the artery, and the plaque is what your body responds to it with by trying to cover it up so it won't spread. I know these sound like strange ideas, but anyway, in this study with women...
I like it.
Oh, you do? Cool. And in this study with women, they gave them coenzyme Q10. And I want to say the dosage was 200 milligrams, but today... you'd probably go into the store and say, I'd like some ubiquinone or some ubiquinol. And they would sell that at almost any health food store. But ubiquinol at 200 milligrams, all of a sudden, it was showing that they were able to increase and improve the blood flow and the circulation. So with the receding gums, they noticed that they were starting to stop. And so I thought to myself, isn't that interesting? So one of the plays here is anything that improves blood flow and circulation to the gums is going to help them regenerate and grow. And I thought to myself, that's right. So I cracked open a textbook, and it was from the Baylor School of Dentistry, and it said what they did was they took students into the dental school, and the only thing they tried to evaluate were how loose were the teeth. I don't mean they got into a fight and they were punched by... you know, a professional boxer or something. Have you ever been punched in the tooth before? Never mind. Don't answer that question. I was one time, but that was a long time ago. I don't need to relive that. But anyway.
You don't want to relive that, no.
But you know what? I got out of it because I had my tennis shoes on.
There you go.
Anyway. But in this particular study, they said, you know what? We have all these people that are showing up at the Baylor School of Dentistry. And this group of people, their teeth are loose. And you know as well as I do, it is not good to have loose teeth. What you want is you want those roots to be very strong, and you want them to be vibrant. You want the ligaments and the gums to be so healthy and radiant that they can hold the teeth firmly in place. And so the instructor said, I think we're going to try something really radical. And they said, well, what do you have in mind? They said, well, we just want them to walk for 30 minutes a day. And they said, are you serious? That's it? You mean there's not a special toothpaste that has like a tooth-tightening chemical in there? And they said, no. We're just going to have them walk every day. And so 30 minutes of walking every day, guess what happened? All their teeth began to tighten up the way they should have been. So I learned a lesson from that. Anytime that you walk, you're increasing the rate and the speed of blood flow throughout the teeth and the gums. And so... yes, it is my interpretation that sometimes when there's periodontal disease and there's plaque, what this really means is we need to increase blood flow to the teeth or the gums, because your blood, that is an ocean of nutrients and oxygen, and it contains a vital life force. And so if the teeth are suffering, maybe one of the best things we can do is go for a 30 to 45 minute walk every day.
And then would you also do the CoQ10? Could you do that with the cinnamon as well?
Oh, my word, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And actually, here's the other part of the equation. You're already, I don't know how you managed to do it, but it doesn't matter what I say, but you're always two steps ahead of me. I can never tactically outthink you or work around you. It's like you have this...
I've listened to you for so many years. You've imparted wisdom.
So you're like Sherlock Holmes. You know my next move every time, don't you?
Not quite, but oh, I try.
Right. You're so humble. I knew I was dealing with a genius this morning. And so And so what we want is we want to increase the amount of blood flow, and we want to increase the amount of oxygen. So if somebody has periodontal disease or receding gums, what that really is, that means they're heading toward diabetes. And so your inclusion of that spice or herb called cinnamon is brilliant. Total brilliance.
Awesome.
I'm going to give you credit for that one. So if a person did those three things and they said, okay, what am I going to do here? Am I going to go to the dentist and have all my teeth removed? Well, if you have to, you have to. But I vote we don't do that. I say
right.
We try to mount a good plan that's going to start rejuvenation and restoration of your gums. And so walking every day, that greatly increases blood flow and circulation. Coenzyme Q10, that stuff has been shown to improve blood flow. Now, that doesn't mean I understand every aspect of what a blessing Coenzyme Q10 is, but the way that I want to look at it, God made it. He designed your body to run off of it, and you got to have it. So why don't we just try giving the body what it needs so it can heal itself?
And then what would you suggest brushing with?
Do you mean the type of toothbrush or what?
What type of toothpaste? Or I know you said before you talked about using a softer toothbrush, as I recall.
Yeah, I'm not a. I'm
but
not
what
a,
would you put on the toothbrush?
Okay, so you could actually make your own toothpaste if you wanted to. It could be everything from a little bit of peppermint, coconut oil, and baking soda. So I am not trying to make a joke or be Mr. Funny by saying this, so I expect no laughter. But when kids were very, very poor, like your childhood, they would take soot from the wood-burning stove and they would brush your teeth with that, and that would be essentially charcoal.
Right.
And so you've probably walked down the aisle where they have all the different types of toothpaste available, but you've seen some that have charcoal, haven't you?
Actually, I haven't.
Oh, my goodness. You mean I just told you something that you haven't heard of before?
Exactly.
Or, oh, my word.
I use that one that begins with a C. Crest.
Did you say the drug called Crestor? Because that's not my recommendation to brush your teeth with.
Okay.
I'm joking. But if they do sell natural toothpaste. I'm trying to think of the name of it. But they will say on the label they don't use anything like triclosan or MSG or aspartame or any of the harsh chemicals that are bad for your teeth, but they do sell many, many natural toothpastes, and I would recommend that you switch to that or maybe even try one that has activated charcoal. Charcoal is actually one of the greatest health remedies of all time. The man that I had lunch with yesterday, he told me that his mother was a little bit of a herbalist, kind of health nut person, kind of like my mom was. And I mean that in a fond, endearing, you know, beneficial, complimentary way.
Right.
But he was saying that when he was a boy, his mother would take willow, you know, from a willow tree, and she'd make charcoal. You know how you put willow in a coffee can and you light it on fire, then you cover it up so it turns to charcoal. But he said all the time what they would do is they would chew up willow charcoal.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. It's just one of the, and of course, willow, that's one of the most significant sources of natural salicylic acid or methyl salicylates. That's aspirin.
Right.
So there may be something to that, but if you had a child that had accidentally swallowed an opioid or a drug or a narcotic just by accident because it looked pretty and the bottle was open on the table,
right,
at the hospital, they would probably give them what's called activated charcoal. I personally think that charcoal is about the most underutilized substance on the planet, and it's like dirt cheap. You could make your own if you wanted to.
Right.
Hey, if I drive by your house today and I see smoke coming from a 1 gallon Folgers coffee can, I'm going to assume you're making charcoal. Would that be correct?
There you go. That could probably work.
But you could easily use a charcoal-based toothpaste to brush your teeth with and see if that helps. But you may need some type of a scaling device to remove that plaque.
Right.
Do you know if you have any issues with your mitral valve of your heart?
So far, everything is good.
Have you ever heard of somebody having like a mitral valve prolapse? And so before the dentist or the dental hygienist would be willing to scale or scrape or clean their teeth, they might actually recommend an antibiotic. And that's probably the best point I can make. And so they give an antibiotic to kind of beat down those infections of the teeth so right. they won't cause further damage to the heart when they clean them. Because when you scrape that stuff off, you kind of stir those bacteria up. The other thing that I can recommend that's just really, really easy to you is there's an age-old technique called oil pulling.
Yes.
when I say oil, how did you know that?
Because I listen to you, and I try to absorb. You're so smart.
I don't know that I'd go that far, but the two or three oils that you could use very, very easily, it could either be coconut oil, like you wisely mentioned, or it could be plain Jane sesame seed oil.
Uh-huh.
Or even olive oil. I remember a study I read years ago that in India, they could not even afford a toothbrush. But what they would do is they would take a few drops of olive oil on the person's finger, and they would have them massage each tooth and gum with the olive oil. And I'm telling you, it was very, very effective at stimulating much greater blood flow and healing of the gums. And so, and I think that's interesting because, you know, a lot of these techniques, they're things that have been used for probably centuries.
Right.
So charcoal, that's nothing new. Oil pulling, that's definitely nothing new, but oil pulling is just where you switch the oil around in your mouth as a technique to try to clean and remove toxins from your gums and your teeth, which I think is very advantageous. So at least you have a working game plan right now. Like, this is your plan to try to restore and improve, right?
Correct. You're so smart. I really appreciate that.
You're very, very welcome. I thank you very much for your phone call.
Hey, thank you. You have an awesome weekend.
You too. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I could tell that gentleman that just called, he was rather nervous. He had never been on the radio before, but this was his first time. I just sensed that. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I think. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Roy. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. How are you?
I'm doing so-so. So you're so smart, I just decided to... I'm trying to get in to see you, but I haven't made it yet. But I wanted to ask you a question. What can you tell me about degenerative disc disease?
Well, if it was just one disc, I would say probably earlier in that person's life they had a significant injury to their lower back. Or
uh-huh.
their... Well, where is the disc located? Is it in the middle back, the neck, or the lower back?
Lower back.
One of the reasons why I read that article earlier this morning about the use of powdered ginger, either in the capsule form or the cooked form or just powdered, is because just about all these people, they said that a lot of the swelling and the inflammation went away when they started taking ginger.
Wonderful.
So ginger has a very, very unique ability to helping to reduce a lot of the inflammation and swelling. And so as long as a person has terrible swelling and pain, it's really hard for your body to heal a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my next topic is, I'm sorry, same topic, but my next piece of advice. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of a substance called MSM?
I have. Actually, but I never have investigated.
Well, it's an organic form of sulfur.
Okay.
And if I'm not mistaken, the way that they manufacture it, or I shouldn't say manufacture, the way it's extracted is when they convert wood into paper. It's just it's a byproduct, but it's useful. It's an organic form of sulfur.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two other forms of sulfur that I like very much. One is called glucosamine sulfate, and the other one's called chondroitin sulfate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have the article in front of me, but I have my imagination and my brain in front of me, so I can close my eyes and I can see the article that way. How about that? And so in this one article, they asked the question, what if somebody has a majorly deteriorated, well, or it's called, like you said wisely, it's degenerative disc disease, where the disc starts to break down and, you know, flatten, mm-hmm. and part of the nucleus can start to squirt out like a bulging or ruptured disc. Well, in this particular article, they showed that if a person could be consistently faithful, meaning they could stay the course for about 18 months to 24 months, that if you took MSM, glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate, that you could actually rejuvenate the disc. And I thought to myself,
wow,
that is amazing. But you know what the issue is? That narrative doesn't fit the quick fix mentality of modern times.
No.
Because what a person wants, I know this because I have people, I asked a woman the other day, I said, okay, what would you like me to do that would make you very happy? She said, I want to be completely pain-free this time tomorrow, and I want to be able to eat exactly everything that I want to eat, and I don't want to discipline myself. I said, well, you're being really, really honest, but that just ain't reality.
No.
But anyway, so if you could have the wherewithal to tell yourself, mm-hmm, oh, my goodness, I've got nothing to lose here. And the thing of it is, those supplements, those are not very expensive at all.
Good. So if I went today to Drug Emporium, they could sell me all of this.
They sure could.
Okay. And it's called MSM sulfate.
Well, it's called MSM.
Okay.
And then you've got glucosamine sulfate and then chondroitin sulfate.
And I should get both of them, right?
Well, here's what I'm willing to bet. If you walk in the store and you go back to whatever section or shelving where they have all the supplements, I bet you anything, you're going to be able to find a formula that has all three of those.
Okay.
And that would be in one formulation. And if you wanted to be really radical, you might say, I don't even know if I can trust Dr. Morgan on that ginger, so to prove him wrong, I'm going to buy a bottle of powdered ginger and I'm going to start taking it every day and see what happens. Well, if you start to notice that you have more flexibility, or you're more spry or limber, mm-hmm, and you have less pain and swelling, wouldn't that be like a gift from heaven above? That
absolutely.
Wouldn't that be a confirmation that you're moving in the right direction?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm going to call that healing.
Absolutely.
That is healing, sister.
Yeah, and so take it from about 18 months is what it's going to take.
Well, that one study that I read, this was a study on, now there weren't any women in this study that I know of, but they were men that had ruptured bulging discs.
Wow.
I started to say discs.
Well, yeah.
So in this study, yes, that's what they took specifically. It was MSM.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do it. Okay. I'm trying to stay out of a wheelchair. I can't handle that kind of stuff.
Well, I tell you, you've got to do whatever you can to stay out of a wheelchair. You just have
absolutely
to.
Yeah.
So you're gonna push back and fight on this deal, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, and I am coming to see you. So you wouldn't believe the people I've sent to you. I mean, I tell everybody about you. So anyway, I'm coming, and I appreciate all the help here.
You're welcome. Thank
Dr.
you very
Roy.
Much.
Okay.
Have
I'll
a good
see
day,
you later.
Ma'am. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I do think she sent me a family of Russian immigrants from Siberia, if I'm not mistaken, so I thank you for that. They were on a covered wagon with a cart of oxen. Never mind. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm calling my daughter-in-law's mother. She's recently being diagnosed with a blood cancer, mommy.
You cut out. What'd you say now? Are you on speakerphone? I'm sorry, I'm losing you, ma'am. What did you say? My apologies. I just pushed the phone line to turn off the call. That wasn't me trying to be rude. It's just I couldn't hear anything that you were saying. But I did hear the part about blood cancer, and I'm almost positive what you were going to say is I thought you said as in multiple. Well, one of the blood cancers is called a multiple myeloma. And there are other different types of blood cancers. These are not what you call solid tumors like pancreatic cancer or lung cancer or brain, that sort of thing, or bone cancer. But a multiple myeloma or a lymphoma or a leukemia, these are the liquid or the blood cancers. And so from my experience, multiple myeloma is doable, even if they've tried everything and they've been given up on because their system no longer responds to either chemotherapy or radiation or maybe other hormone treatments they might have. So, from my experience, a person literally has to avoid sugar like the plague. And just think of it this way. A cancer cell, by its nature, it does not want to consume the fat that comes from an avocado, or from olive oil, or from fresh grass-fed butter, or from eating the fat in walnuts. No, 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 no. It can't utilize that stuff. And so this would be a situation where you got to do whatever you can to make it very, very hard for those blood cancers to live. And one of the ways that you make it hard for those cancers to live is you starve them to death. Do not give them the very thing that they want to snack on. That's called sugar. So it may sound harsh, and I know for a fact I'm not going to find one oncologist that agrees, but then again, the oncologist is also a hematologist. That means they are the greatest blood expert of all time. They've studied the blood and the immune system more than anybody else. But I would just suggest to you is if you starve the cancer cells of their favorite form of food, then you are doing yourself a huge, huge favor. So eliminating all refined sugar and probably grains also, because modern grains have been so hybridized, genetically modified, adulterated, where they're almost like eating sugar now. It's just a whole different world than 2,000 years ago. If you would like to join me on the radio, please call back 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
God bless you, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
Good. I pushed that button just for you today.
I'm telling you because I've been praying to get in this morning.
Well, your prayers have been answered. Thanks
yes,
for calling.
Sir. Yes, sir. Listen, I had surgery back here. I had carpotunnel surgery back here in December. And the scar, all that is healed, but it is so sore to the touch as though the surgery just happened. I've had therapy on it. I was told that.
I'm sorry to be rude. Where's the scar located again?
My wrist, carpal tunnel.
Oh, so the scar, the external scar, is it a different color than the skin around it?
It stays red.
Yeah, that means it hadn't healed.
Okay. I was told that that's a lot of scar tissue. It feels swollen all the time. Thick.
Well, at this point it shouldn't, right?
I would think not.
And so if your immune system is able to go to that area and clean it up and heal it, all that redness will leave the scar and it will actually go through the process of completing its task and you'll have closure. It'll be a done deal.
Yes.
I'm looking. I got a huge scar on my left wrist.
Mm-hmm. It's my left also.
Oh, well, we have a lot in common. But but mine is, let me see, how long is it? One, two. It's got to be at least 3 inches long.
About that, yeah.
I did it to myself, though. I ran through a glass door. Of course, I was 2 years old. I mean, how was I supposed to know it was glass?
I don't know. At 2 years old.
Anyway, well, I was 2 years old, so I just barely remember what happened. So, but no, that should not be red. And so what we have here is we have continual inflammation. Your body is not able to heal it. And is it really, really red in just one particular location, or is the entirety of the scar red and discolored, almost purple?
No, it's not almost purple. It's just a reddish color, and the little knots from where they took the stitches, little puffy spots at each where each stitch was.
Are you positive that they removed all the stitches, or could there be like a small fragment left behind?
I don't think it is. From December, I would think that would have festered out, wouldn't it?
Well, unless there was a small fragment of debris in there, then that would explain why it's red. I know it's a drastic analogy, but like if a surgeon left a sponge inside of somebody and sewed them back up, well, there's going to be a problem with that, a big,
oh,
big
yes.
problem. They could probably die from sepsis anyway.
Yes.
Well, let me just talk about best case scenario, and I'll give you some ideas, and we'll just start to sort through this piece by piece. Is that okay?
Let me share one other part with this with you, right quick. There are moments when it feels like a razor blade just slicing me.
Oh, I hate that.
I do too, because it's very, very painful.
I don't even like the. I don't even like those two things in the same sentence: wrist and razor blade on the wrist. I don't like that.
Well, the hand, yes.
Okay. So, given what we've got to work with this morning, let me give you three or four ideas, and we'll see if we can't try to find some way to get the body to have closure on this. All right.
All right.
Okay. There is a substance called calcium bentonite clay.
Okay.
And actually, there's a very, very large store here in Jacksonville, and half of the store is devoted to groceries, and the other half is devoted to, you know, clothing and motor oil and cosmetics.
Yes, and pharmacy. Yes.
Yeah, and I can't for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it, but I've been to it once or twice. You know,
Wally World.
I couldn't remember the name of it. But on the shelf where they have some natural products in the cosmetics aisle, mm-hmm. which is usually where I hang out all the time anyway because I'm totally into that stuff. I'm joking. But they have a substance called Indian Healing Clay.
Okay.
And that's going to be a combination of like kaolin clay, calcium bentonite clay, volcanic ash. And it probably has some other good stuff in there also. But basically, it's in the dried powdered form, so as a person would add a little bit of water, you can essentially make mud out of it.
Okay.
And you can make the mud as thin or as thick as you want. Mm-hmm. So if you add just a little bit, it's going to be like kind of a ball of clay that you dig up out of the yard when you're planting grass or something. That's not the consistency you want. But if it's a little bit mm-hmm. wetter, you could make a thick layer of mud and put it all over your wrist and your hand, and you can do that twice a day and leave it on for about 10 to maybe 15 minutes. And let the clay act as an electrically charged magnet to pull any debris from inside your wrist and hand into the clay. It feels weird because, you know, it's drying like, you know, clay.
Like clay does, yeah.
But all you got to do is just wash it off when you're done.
Okay.
The other thing that I might consider doing, there is a substance called wheat germ oil.
Mm-hmm.
Need to be careful how I tell you this information because, I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can do this, but would you believe me if I told you that literally 60 to 70% of everything that you place on your skin is going to be absorbed by the skin?
Yes.
It just is. And so if you say, I'm going to help my neighbor wash his engine in diesel fuel, mm-hmm. and you're gonna dip your hand. No, don't do that. Your skin will drink up that diesel fuel. That's toxic stuff.
Yes.
And so if you were to put wheat germ oil on that scar, you could always just put it to the test and see if that helps your body seal the deal or close that healing deal and make it the redness go away. That's one option you have. Now, the other one that I like very, very much is just the use of honey, raw honey. But what you would do is you would take like a piece of gauze or like a big Band-Aid that would cover that and mm-hmm. just butter that Band-Aid up with honey and just tape it on your wrist and leave it on there.
Okay.
You've got very little to lose by what I'm telling you.
Oh, I believe that.
I think at the most I've blown maybe $20 of your money if you don't have any of this stuff. And so if you would do these things, let's see if we can start to either... Well, there's a different way of looking at this. One aspect of your immune system is to push out anything that doesn't belong. And so, for example, if somebody had like a small bump on their skin, well, what you want is, let's just say that's a small boil. You want your body to push that all the way through all layers of the skin mm-hmm. and push it to the outside where it can drain. And that way you can... It'll clear up and can be resolved, and you can go on about your life. But what if you had like a boil that's down in those lower layers and it never comes to the surface? Well, that's where a doctor may actually lance it to open up so the poison can spew forth.
Okay, I've had a lancing.
Well, but you know what I'm talking
and
about.
I know what that, yes, I've
so
had that.
If you apply these things on there, what we're doing is we're helping your immune system and your body push whatever's toxic out.
Okay.
Because there's something in there. Even if it doesn't make sense, there's something in that wrist or in that incision. There is.
Yeah, the incision is in the bottom part of the palm of my hand.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But is that where it feels like there's sharp razor blades poking you or jabbing you?
It's like, yes, it's like what you was just talking about, you know, how they go in and cut that open, whatever, for mm-hmm. healing. That's what it feels like when it happens.
Well, you've got these three techniques.
Yes.
And I think that they're all very, very safe, and there shouldn't be a problem. Sure, it feels freaky to have clay dry to your wrist and your hand, but whoop-de-doo, you'll get over it. It won't be that big of a deal.
Amen.
And
will that also help the scar tissue?
That's totally exactly
thick.
That's exactly why I'm telling you all these things.
Okay.
We're trying to kill two birds with one stone.
Praise God.
Well, maybe the word kill is not appropriate. It's just a figure of speech.
No, we're trying to kill it.
Okay, there we go. If we can kill the pain and we can kill the redness and inflammation, the scar to help it to heal, then yes.
Amen.
So you're looking at those things right there. And there's other techniques also, but these are so simple and so easy. I think anybody could do them very, very safely without any too much of a difficulty.
Yes. And the raw honey, once I put that on, how long should I let that remain?
Well,
just change it out once a day?
Yeah, you can do more than that, because what's going to happen is your skin is going to completely absorb and drink the honey that's in the bandage. You'll suck the bandage dry.
Okay.
And you'll peel it off and you'll go, oh my goodness, did my left wrist and palm just soak up and drink the honey? The answer is yes. So you can do that as much as you want. The reason why I said the covering or the gauze or the Band-Aid is just to kind of keep it off your clothing and everything else, because honey's pretty sticky. But if you wanted to, you could just take a few drops of honey and just rub into it every 15 minutes of the day if you wanted to. I don't care.
That sounds good, too.
I just thought at nighttime when you're asleep, if you had a covering, that way you don't have to worry about getting your pillowcase all sticky.
Right.
I mean, what if you had a small chihuahua right beside you in bed, and you woke up and the chihuahua was stuck to your wrist because the honey had hardened? That would be very challenging.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for your phone call.
Okay. I was going to ask you about my fingers. I've been trying to get them to
bend. Well, the reason I say that is because I'm already out of time.
Okay. Well, you have a blessed rest of your day.
Thank you, ma'am. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.